Hey everyone, welcome back to the Enduring Churches podcast. We're so excited that you take a little bit of time with us each week to hopefully be encouraged. Alan and I do this to help you to endure. We want your church, your staff, all your folks to endure in their faith, and your church to continue to have an impact on the people in the community that God has placed it in. And so, Alan, we have a special guest with us today. Why don't you introduce Carl to us?
Yeah, well, I'm so excited today. I reached out with an email to Carl Vaders a few weeks ago asking if he'd be willing to join us on our podcast. And he got back to me really quickly and said he'd love to. So we are so excited to have you with us. He has been in pastoral ministry for almost 40 years. Finally, someone who's been at it longer than us, Trent. So we're wow. Glad about that. He's the teaching pastor of Cornerstone Christian Fellowship, a healthy small church in Orange County, California, where he's ministered there for over 27 years with his wife, Shelley. They have three kids and two grandkids. He produces resources for helping small churches thrive at carlvaders.com and has created Spark Outline. That's the Small Church Pastors Adapt and Recover Kit, which we all need a little recovery these days, which is updated with resources to help us get through this time. He has a heart for the small church, which is, 90% of the churches out there, and he wants to help us lead well. He's the author of four books, most recently, The Church Recovery Guide, which we certainly all need to learn how to adapt and thrive after crises. 100 Days to a Healthier Church, which is one that I really got more familiar with him after looking through that book. And so, Carl, we are glad to have you with us. So fill in the blanks. What did we miss?
Oh, thank you. No, you didn't miss anything. Actually, I need to update my bio because this month is my 40th anniversary in ministry. So up until a couple of weeks ago, what you said was dead on accurate. But as of this month, it's 40 years.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, and so tell us a little bit about your kids. Alan mentioned that you have three kids, right?
I do, but they're only secondarily important because we have grandkids now. So that's really all that matters.
I've got one and a third grandkids, so yeah.
Yeah, no, we have three kids. They're all living just within a couple miles of us, which is really, really nice. So my sons live just a couple miles to one side of us, and my daughter and son-in-law live just a couple miles to the other side of us, and they're the ones with the grandkids. And in fact, they're here now, so if all of a sudden there's some banging or yelling on the door behind me, that's going to be the grandkids trying to get in to see Grandpa.
Let them in.
Yeah.
Well, Carl, again, we're so glad that you were willing to join us, and you have just kind of found a unique niche ministry, really, in helping small churches across America. So why is this ministry important to you?
Well, that's a great question. I fell into this ministry by mistake. I tried to build a big church and wasn't able to. And then I looked around and realized, wait a minute, I'm not unusual. I'm typical. there's a whole lot of people out there tried to do it and didn't succeed at it, but all we're hearing are the success stories. And I'm grateful to hear the success stories, and I love big churches. But what I discovered was my story of trying to do it and not being able to get past these certain barriers was really far more typical. And it didn't matter how many church growth experts we brought in. I mean, we had multiple church growth experts that came into the church, set everything up, tweaked a little bit here and there. But basically, every one of them said, oh, this church won't be small for long. And the first couple of times you hear that, it sounds awesome. But, 10 years later, and the 25th time you hear it, it's like, really? When's that going to happen? So I had to reconfigure. I actually had to go through a very, very difficult season, emotionally, spiritually, and try to figure out what was going on here. Almost left ministry thinking I was a failure. And then just had to really rediscover what success in ministry looks like without numbers attached to it. And as I learned those lessons, I started teaching others. And I was stunned. I'm stunned almost every day with the response to this message. Because when I wrote my first book, The Grasshopper Myth, I didn't even send it to a publisher. I knew no publisher would be interested in it. So I self-published, which 8 years ago, it seems like forever now, but 8 years ago, like Kindle was up, but Amazon didn't have their print to print one book for every order thing. So I had to go out and like find a printer that would print a minimum number of 2,000 books. And I thought I'd have 1,500 books sitting in my garage for the rest of my life. But they flew out of my house through Amazon. I started the blog and it started getting picked up. I was just stunned. And what I discovered was my story is the normal story, but I was one of the first people to actually tell it. So there are so many pastors, maybe 90% of us, who find more familiarity with my story than with the stories of massive numerical success, which again, I'm grateful for, but it's just not typical. So that's where it all started from. And since then, I've just been blessed to be able to get this message out there to others who are who have struggled and help them understand that they are not failures if their church is not growing with the numbers that are sometimes we're told are almost inevitable. I call it the myth of inevitability. There, you can do all the right things and it is not inevitable that the numbers will come. Sometimes it does. And when we do, we're grateful, but if not, then God has a different place for you. And we can find real fulfillment there too.
Carl, you mentioned the kind of the myth that we all believe as going into ministry, thinking that, okay, we're only successful if we have a huge church that develops. It doesn't matter if we're living in a cornfield in the middle of Iowa or Oklahoma, that we're supposed to have this huge church because the huge churches are the ones who do all the big events and stuff. And so what makes a small church special?
Oh, I mean, any church of any size is special. Rick Warren said it years ago, we need all types of churches to reach all types of people. And I'm a profound believer in that. And one of the types of church is the small church. And when I talk to people who attend small churches, and I ask them regularly, and now I've asked up to thousands of people, you know, in a conference, how many of you believe this? And you get a large tally real fast. And the number one reason people say they attend small churches is this: at a small church, the pastor knows my name. There are a whole lot of people who have the spiritual and emotional need to be pastored by their pastor. Now, not everybody needs that. A lot of people go to big churches. They've never met the pastor personally. They're pastored in their small group, and they are able to receive all the spiritual nourishment they need and opportunity for ministry that they need that way. And if that's where they are, God bless them. But there's a whole lot of folks for whom that does not work. It matters to them that the pastor knows their name, that the person that when they run into a difficulty in their family and they need somebody to pray for them, that it's the person who baptized them, that it's the person who preached on Sunday, that it's the pastor of the church. And they're not wrong for wanting that. They're not wrong for needing that for their own spiritual nourishment and to grow and be discipled. That's simply the way some people are. Some people need it, some people don't. So the small church allows that opportunity for the people who grow spiritually in that environment in the best way.
Yeah, so how do we overcome that idea then that small equals failure? Because, the pastor, from the church member side, I can see that, but from the pastor side, it's a little bit harder.
Well, if you can figure out how to overcome it, let me know. I'm working on a constant basis to overcome that feeling. You know, every once in a while, there'll be a Sunday morning. Well, recently, nobody's worried about it. Right. The pandemic with so few people. But I've still had times recently where I sit there on Sunday morning and go, oh, where is everybody? And then I got to go, I'm the small church guy. I'm supposed to be okay with this. So it's a constant battle because we live in a culture where adding numbers to things is the way we measure success. So the way I'm doing it, and I have not completely done it, and not completely successful with it, is I look around for non-numerical ways to understand that this ministry has been successful. As an example, you know, I'm one of the types of ministries that I tend to be called at is to do pastoral counseling. Not every pastor does that well. Not every small church pastor does that well. It just happens to be one of my strengths. And so, you know, I can spend, you know, hours and hours with a couple that's on the verge of divorce and then doesn't get a divorce. And there are dozens, maybe 100 or more couples out there that are in successful marriages now, at least in part because I was there to be able to help walk them through hours and hours of consultation and counseling. But here's the deal. You can't put that on a spreadsheet. And most of the situations, you can't even make that a Sunday morning testimony, because if they get up and say, are we almost divorced? It's going to freak their kids out. So there's a lot of ministry that just simply is invisible. One of the things that I really highly recommend for small church pastors is to keep what I call a healthy church log. And we're actually developing a book that will give them prompts to help that. Hopefully in the next 6 months to a year, this book will be out. It'll basically just be blank pages, but it will have prompts on them to remind them of, have you considered this and this and this? And as good things happen in your church, write it down. This couple didn't divorce. This guy came back to Christ after having been gone for many, many years, and all the good things that happened in a small church. And then you can look back at that when you're feeling discouraged and see these are notes of success in ministry, even if they don't have a number attached to it.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because we do all, you know, it seems like we've been raised in this whole idea of counting numbers as our metric to know if we're failures or successes. And so, I'm looking forward to that prompt. I need to do that. That would be so good. But I want to ask you, Carl, we're kind of in this whole new metric, whole new landscape in the last year since the pandemic. And I know that you've had a lot of impact and a lot of opportunities to visit with pastors, maybe in your area and around the U.S. What are some healthy and maybe some unhealthy tendencies that you're seeing as churches are kind of working through this whole pandemic thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. As we were going through it from the beginning on, I connected with a handful of people, including mental health professionals who are, you know, Christian mental health professionals, to understand what was happening emotionally to us and relationally to us and so on. And in the research that I've done and the continuing conversations that I'm having, I found four very specific areas, characteristics that when churches do this well, they tend to survive and thrive even through this crisis. And when they don't, to the degree that they don't, they're having a struggle. And so let me walk you through the four of them. First of all, resources in reserve. Too many churches, in fact, our church was like this for a lot of years. We were usually not week to week on paying the bills, but month to month, yeah. Look a month out, will we have the money to pay the salaries? We hope so, only if the offerings come in extra good this month, kind of a thing. And I did that for 10 to 12 years here in our current church, and until I realized we can't do that anymore. And so I just made a determination we were going to put a column in the budget, even if we didn't have the money for it, where we were going to put resources in reserve until we had 3 months of budget in cash. It took us 10 years to do that. I figured 10% a month, take us 3 years, we'll have it done. No, 10 years. But that happened about 4 or 5 years ago. So when this crisis hit, and a lot of churches were scrambling because our church, like other churches, had an immediate downtick in offerings and an increase in expenses, because all of a sudden we had to figure out how to do things technically. And we didn't own the cameras. We didn't own the mics because we hadn't been live streaming before. So increase in expenses, decrease in offerings, but we had the money on hand. But the churches that were month to month or week to week, some of them closed within weeks of having to close their physical buildings because they weren't able to do it. So that's one of the key things. So resources in reserve. The second thing is adaptability. The churches that adapted well and quickly to the churches that are used to adapting, and they did well. Like churches, for instance, that had an idea of church to us means this building at this time, wearing these clothes, singing these songs, reading out of this Bible version, right? And the more restrictions you put on it that said this is church, then when all of a sudden you couldn't meet in that building at that time, all of a sudden you think your church is closed. And a lot of churches didn't survive because they thought they closed our church. The government never closed our church. The government never closed any church. The government doesn't have the ability to close a church. They can tell us we can't meet in our buildings, but that doesn't close any churches, right? Mm-hmm. So right. Churches that understood that and were able to adapt, they had a much easier time at it. So if they were able to adapt, then they could do it. Third big thing was team-based leadership. The pastors that have been doing this all on their own as lone rangers and running at 90 to 100%, all of a sudden they couldn't do it anymore when they hit pandemic. The churches that had teams that could shoulder the load. And, oh, here's a weird thing that happened really early in pandemic. I got a lot of calls from small church pastors who, and a lot of them said this, they were experiencing this for the first time in their ministry. People were volunteering to help who had never volunteered before. And a lot of pastors said, and I don't know where to put them because I do everything. Oh my goodness. What? Right? But that is, but they created that problem. Now I get what small church ministry is like, and small church pastors, we have to do more than normal, but it doesn't matter what size your church is. You can still share that burden. We need to be discipling people who become disciple makers, and you create teams. So in our church, everybody who volunteered, we had a place for them. Everybody shared the load. And in fact, our team stepped up and we thrived because now we had more people volunteering and we had places to put them and we had teams ready to go for that. And we could adapt on the fly. And then the fourth one was unity. Churches that, you know, thought there were a lot of churches that thought they were united on mission, but in fact, they were only united politically, or they were only united ethnically, or right. Or socioeconomically. Right. And all of the stuff that's happened in the last year has challenged them on all of those levels. And if your reason for unity isn't the mission of Jesus, isn't the Great Commission and the Great Commandment, then this past year has really hurt you. But the churches that have said, you know, it doesn't matter if we disagree politically. It doesn't matter. Because in our congregation, we got people who disagree politically, who disagree about vaccines, who disagree about masks, who disagree about whether we should be in person or not in person. We got people in our church who disagree on all those issues, but we haven't had a single blow up because above all of those issues, we are united on mission. So when you put those four things together, those are the things, if you're to the degree you're not doing them, the church is going to be having problems. And I think for the next few years, we're going to be having problems because guess what, folks? Even when the pandemic is over, I think we've got a next wave. And I don't mean to be the bearer of bad tidings, but I'd rather us be ready for it by knowing about it than be surprised by it. We've got 2 to 3 to maybe 5 years of challenges bigger than we've ever faced before. We are going to go through a season of bankruptcies and evictions and divorces and pastoral resignations and church closures and exposure of abuse that we have never seen in our lives before. The stuff that has been hidden by the lockdown, once we start crawling out of our caves, we are going to see stuff that is going to be needs on a level we've never seen before. And we as the church are absolutely the best place in the world. There's no better place to get help for all that combination of issues than in healthy churches of all sizes. So pastor, first of all, take care of your own spirit and your own family and your own church. Make it healthy and strong so that your hospital is ready to receive patients, because there are going to be a lot of wounded people over the next few years who are going to need it. So if we can get those four things in place, I believe we'll be better suited to reach those needs.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. You know, everyone keeps asking that question, when are we going to get back to normal? And there won't ever be that. There is more on the other side of this. And, you know, what we did to try to fix the pandemic creates its own set of problems. Yes, absolutely. I appreciate that. So over the last year, you know, like you like us, we're trying to figure out how we do this online thing, how we do everything, how we do church. But what has surprised you the most over the last year? What caught you off guard that you weren't ready for?
What caught me off guard was the multiplicity of traumas that kept hitting us one after another. When this first was coming, I actually talked to our congregation. I said, what appears to be coming appears to me to be a combination of 9/11 and Y2K, if it actually ended up having been a thing. We had the lead up to Y2K that turned out to be nothing, and thank the Lord for that. This one had a lead up like Y2K, but it had a devastation like 9/11. But we thought it would be a singular thing. Y2K, even if it had happened, would have been a singular event. 9/11, when it happened, was a singular event. This is not a singular event. This came in slowly like a tsunami that you can see coming off from off the shore. And is that getting bigger? We don't know. We probably ought to get ready. And then after that one hits, another wave hits, and then another wave hits. And so you had pandemic, and then you had all of the racial challenges that we had this summer, and in the middle of the craziest political season of our lifetime. And I'm probably forgetting 4 or 5 other major events that in any other year would have been the biggest news of the year. Right. And so it was in wave after wave after wave. So we're just, you know, you get up groggy after getting hit by the one wave. And before you even have a chance to recover, another wave hits you. That's been the biggest surprise. And I think the biggest challenge. And so even as we come out of recovery, like I said, we are recovering from one thing, pandemic, but we are going to have both the residue of that and the residue of all of these other things to deal with. And they're going to come again, I think, in waves that we're not going to be, that we're not going to be able to anticipate their timing or their ferocity, but we better anticipate that they're coming. Brace yourself for whatever comes. Like, even if I don't know when the wave's going to hit, I'm going to brace myself for it, because folks, it's coming. So that was the big surprise, was the multiplicity of it. And then the second and most disappointing thing of all for me is how fractured the church became over this rather than becoming united.
Yeah.
That is to me, I think spiritually the longest term damage to come out of this is going to be the fracturing of the body of Christ that happened during this. Individual congregations like ours were able to come together in extraordinary ways, but the church in America especially has fractured in ways that I never thought I'd ever see in my lifetime. And that will be a long-term damage that will be really, really hard to recover from.
That's good. Well, let's talk about something positive here for a moment.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Well, it's, one of the cool things that Alan and I have seen on your website is that you've introduced a thing called How To Tuesdays. And we think that's such a cool thing and a great resource, and we're going to try to spread the word about that. But tell us about what led up to you starting that, and maybe what some things we can be looking forward to in that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, everybody knows right now that if you want to figure out how to do something, you go to YouTube and you print in how to, and then put in whatever your problem is. And 99.9% of the time, there will be a video that will walk you through for free how to do the things, and you can actually see somebody do it, unlike the old instruction manuals, which were always a challenge, right? And so through this pandemic, I've been regularly getting questions that I never gotten before, especially of a technical nature. Like when this thing first hit, you know, for a big church, it was like, okay, just let everybody in the church know we'll only be online this Sunday. Well, that was the same for us too, except that we'd never been online before.
Right.
So we had like 4 days to buy the equipment, figure out how to shoot the service, figure out how to upload it, figure out how to tell people where it was.
Right.
And so small churches had these challenges, and we were trying to figure it out ourselves. And we're still in a mode now where there are a lot of technical challenges. There are a lot more things being done online, even as we come back into our regular church services. I hope that the churches who went online stay online as well, for their shut-ins, for people who are physically too far distant to ever come to their service, for people who are exploring a church. Before anybody ever walks into your actual church door, they will look for your website, and if it doesn't exist, they will never come into your church door. That's almost certainty. And if they find your website, they will watch a couple services. So you better do your online service, and you better do it well, because if they don't like your online service, they won't come through the church door. Your front door of your church is no longer your front door. It's like the third or fourth door they walk through. So in understanding that, again, big churches, they've been doing these technical things for some time, but in a lot of small churches, it's like, how do I figure out how to do this? So I thought, you know, let's do some how-to videos on YouTube. And we're trying to make all of them as short and simple as possible. So we've got how to set up a QR code, because we can't have to hand out a physical bulletin. So we scan the QR code. How do you set that up for your church? When you do that, where do you send them? So I think next week is going to be how to set up a virtual bulletin using Linktree, which is what we use at our church. How to shoot those short personal 5 to 6 minute videos in a way where we don't make a lot of weird mistakes, like, you know, shooting from underneath and getting my double chin, that kind of a thing. We're going to walk through. Yeah, I just created one that'll come out in a few weeks from now about how to sign up for your own Zoom account. A lot of us have been on Zoom because we've been invited by others, but we don't know how to set up our own Zoom account so we can start a meeting. And it's really simple. But unless somebody shows you, you may not know how to do it. So we're looking at all those kinds of things, how to embed a YouTube video onto your church website, those kinds of things. So if any of your listeners have ideas and think, man, I wish I knew how to do such and such, email me or go to my website, carlvaders.com, and hit the contact button, and let me know, hey, here's something I could use. If I know how, or if I can figure out how, we'll put out a how-to video, and we put them out on How-To Tuesdays.
Yeah, I love that. That is just the coolest. That's just the coolest thing that you're doing that. I actually, before we start, I was like, I want to watch that QR code one. And so I actually watched that. I watched that this morning just so I would understand that a little bit better, and was thinking, okay, so where do I send people to when I create this? Because I love it. And I think that that is truly needed. You know, that's how it was for us. We didn't know anything. And just like you, we had a few days to kind of figure it out, and we were able to figure it out. And, you know, grateful that we've got a great website and all that kind of stuff. And it does help. And I ask people now, well, did you check us out online? And everyone, yes, I watched a service, and that is your new front door. We used to say your website was your front door, new front door of your church. That's not your front door. That's kind of like the secondary door. The primary door is what's your service like, and what's your online service like. And so that's where people are going to find you first. But for me, what happened was, I noticed about 6 months into the pandemic, I really got down. I got my staff was looking at me. I've got a full-time staff member and then a part-time staff member. And they looked at me and said, Alan, you're not doing well. And I said, I'm not doing well. And then the next week I was doing better. And one of them was like down in the dumps, you're not doing well. No, I'm not doing well. So what would you say to pastors? There's a lot who don't have the support that I was fortunate to have. What would you say to those pastors who really struggled through this season?
Yeah, that's a very important question. I was the same way. I just went through, you know, the doldrums. You know, I sat in the house and I ate too much ice cream and watched too much TV. And that's the thing. When we need our mental and spiritual health the most, we tend to go away from the things that actually bring us health. So I did the same thing. I read typically about 100 books a year. I'm just a reader. I've always got a couple of books going. Last year, I don't think I read 6 books. I'd sit down, I would read a page, and I get to the end of the page and go, I have no idea what I just read. I couldn't comprehend to read. That to me was one sign where I am not in a good place right now. And to a certain degree, over the past year, some of it is just simply, that's just the way it is, and we're just going to have to get through to the other side of it. So my recommendation for pastors is a couple things. First of all, take a nap. Mm-hmm. And I mean that physically. Now, if you're bivocational and you're working full-time and then you're trying to scramble for Sunday, I get it. Saying take a nap is one thing. Finding the time to do so is another. But bottom line is, you need your body and your spirit, your emotion need as much rest as possible right now. We are all experiencing trauma in levels that we've never experienced it before. And trauma demands rest. That's the way God built us. And if you don't rest, your body will figure out how to make you stop by breaking down. So either you proactively stop by taking a rest, or your body will reactively make you stop by breaking down. But you're going to stop. It's not whether or not you stop. It's whether or not you choose to stop in a healthy way, or whether or not you don't choose to do so and your body does so in an unhealthy way. So that's the one thing. You've got to take a nap. Secondly, you've got to have somebody in your life that you can bounce things off of. And it has to be in addition to your spouse. Hopefully you've got a good, healthy relationship with your spouse. If not, work harder on fixing your relationship with your spouse than you do on church ministry. Because it doesn't, you know, over the years, you know, we've had some challenges in ministry, and the seasons when things were really, really bad at the church, if I could still go home to a healthy church, to a healthy home, it almost didn't matter what happened at the church. It couldn't really affect me all that deeply. But when things weren't well at home, even the smallest things at church just sent me around the bend. So we've got to have that. But in addition to our spouse, we need to find somebody that we can trust, that we can talk to, that we can bounce things off of. And I know right now it's challenging because we can't physically be together. But the other advantage is, now that we're used to video conferencing, you can find counselors, whether it's a professional counselor or whether it's something your denomination might have set up, or whether it's a pastoral friend from years ago who physically moved away. Well, it doesn't matter that they're physically away now. You can still see each other on your laptop and you can still have a conversation. Is it as good as being in the room? No, it never is. But is it better than nothing? Absolutely. It's way better than nothing. So get rest and find somebody you can trust who you can bounce these things off of. Those are the two things. And then, of course, you know, I'm adding this third simply because, not because it's less important, but because we sometimes misunderstand it. And obviously, also spend the time in prayer and in the word that you need to. The reason I didn't make that first is because sometimes we see that as just one more task I've got to do, especially when you're burnt out. Having somebody tell you to pray more and read the Bible more just sounds like you're adding one more burden to your load. I understand that. But when you're in a place where you are rested a little more and where you have trusted people you can bounce things off of, then the understanding of going to God's word in prayer, that is part of building up your spiritual life that we really need right now.
Carl, you mentioned the bivocational pastors and the bivocational new term, co-vocational. This is kind of, I wanted to see if there was any resources, because I feel like those people, there's so much that they have to do with a full-time job and then still trying to do their ministry at the church. I wanted to ask if there are any resources, and of course we would point them to you and your website, but is there anything else you might suggest?
I've run into a handful of different places for bivocational, but I'm going to back off of that because that is not my primary emphasis. And there are people who do bivocational leadership ministry better than me, and I would leave it to them to do that, because that's not my emphasis. I've never been bivocational. I mean, I kind of am now. I mean, I'm doing this in addition to, you know, the work at the church, but not because I have to financially, but because these are two areas of ministry the Lord has led me to. So I've never had to do the bivocational thing. So I try not to offer advice in areas where I don't have significant experience.
Right. I understand.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. And, you know, this has just been a great conversation, and I just want you to know that I appreciate your heart, and I'm grateful that God has really opened the door, because I think it's a door that resonates with so many of us. And I'm grateful that we have this conversation, that you can be a small and be a healthy church, that if you're not blowing the top off everything, that numerically, that you can still be a healthy, God-moving church in your community and a force for God in this world. And we need to hear more of that. I think sometimes we fall in love too with the celebrity mentality instead of the servant mentality.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and that's the other part of that is the celebrity mentality is a burden that I would never want to bear. I guess I understand the draw towards fame and celebrity. I don't see the value of it. I see why someone would seek power. I understand why someone would seek money. I get what I could maybe want to do with those things, along with the massive temptations that come with them. Of course, I don't get the value of fame. That's the thing that just confuses me. But I do see the burden of fame. So, I mean, all we have to do is take a look at the list of, you know, well-known pastors and ministry leaders over the last, you know, few months, let alone few years, who, when there is a problem, the light that we all seem to long for when we're doing well is not the light we want on us when we're going through a difficulty or when we've done something wrong. So, but servanthood is a very different thing. If I put servanthood first, then even if I don't end up in a position where anybody notices it, I still get to serve. You're never dependent on somebody else's reaction to you if your entire idea of success in ministry is based on, can I serve? Because you can always serve.
Right. That's so good. That's so good. And I'm excited about this, because so many of the things that, you know, as we talk about fame, there's so many large church pastors that are offering resources, and it's so refreshing to have somebody who's more like us, and I think more like the majority of pastors throughout the United States and throughout the world, that are doing their best to serve and minister to a smaller church, a smaller community maybe. And so, Carl, thank you so much, and you're a blessing, and we're excited that you've taken time to be able to spend with us today.
Oh, thanks. I always appreciate the opportunity to speak to my fellow pastors, and especially those in smaller congregations.
Well, and we will send everyone we can to your website. Again, that's Carl, spelled the theological way, with a K.
Yes.
CarlVaters.com. And we have been blessed. And, you know, our goal is to help you and your church endure. That's why Trent and I do this podcast. And we're grateful that Carl was able to join us today. And so we've got more things coming up to try to help you and your church endure. Please don't hesitate to reach out to us on our Facebook page, at our website, or you can email us, Alan@EnduringChurches.Consulting, Trent@EnduringChurches.Consulting. But we look forward to catching you back on our next episode. And we've got some more great interviews on the horizon as well. We look forward to catching you later. Bye-bye.